Good afternoon, Cell Group, and welcome back to our consideration of last Sunday's Gospel. At this time of the church's year, we've got a few Sunday Gospels on that all come from John's Gospel, although it's the year of Mark. But next Sunday we'll be starting Mark's Gospel. So this is, as usual, a very intriguing, interesting section from John. Just looking at the text, John stood with two of his disciples, Jesus passed. Now, even that sentence, John stood and Jesus passed. John is static and Jesus is in motion. And there's a contrast here that Jesus is the new Moses, and he's on the move and he's active, and John is standing because he's the old Testament, literally. He's the last of the prophets to be able to point to Jesus. So John stood with two of his disciples, and John said, "Look, there is the Lamb of God." Hearing this, the two disciples followed Jesus. So that's a very significant thing. John is allowing his two disciples to leave him and follow Jesus. Pardon me. And it's also an indication that the early church was made up of former followers of the Baptist, also Pharisees, Samaritans, and Gentiles. It's a great mixture in the community among whom John the Evangelist lived and when he wrote this at the end of the first century. So he's honouring these former disciples of John the Baptist. And John says a lot when he says, "Look, there is the Lamb of God." That's a huge theme in John's Gospel, the Passover. And of course, the Lamb of God. I was thinking about it in terms of each family would have got a lamb, and that Jesus was God's Lamb. Is the lamb that he had for the Passover meal, which would happen at the end of Jesus' ministry. And that there are three times in John's Gospel where the Passover is mentioned. Apart from this reference here, you wouldn't count that as a reference to the Passover, but a reference to the Lamb of Sacrifice. The first reference would be, he went up to Jerusalem and he cleansed the temple. That's in John 2, verses 14 to 17. And then, of course, there's the great treatise on the Eucharist in his sixth chapter. And in verse 4, chapter 6, it was Passover time. And that's the context for the whole story about the feeding of the 5,000. Eucharist tied up with Passover. But that Lamb of God is a tremendously rich symbol. And it's a phrase that is in the Mass itself. Behold the Lamb of God. Behold him who takes away the sins of the world. So the Lamb of God is the sacrificial lamb who's in the first Passover meal, whose blood was taken after he was slaughtered and kept aside as the body was roasted in the oven, roast lamb. And the blood of that was then used to mark the doorposts and the lintel of the houses where the faithful Jewish people lived. And then the angel of death passed over these houses and the people were able to escape from Egypt into the promised land. And then the Passover meal was a recollection of this every year, that they would think of this great escape and would think of the goodness of God and the mercy of God as they ate this meal of roast lamb. And Jesus is the new exodus, the new way of escape. He's the Lamb of God who sacrificed. Then there's instructions about the sacrifice of Jesus. You'd find these instructions in Exodus chapter 12, verses 1 to 6. If a household is too small for a whole lamb, it shall join with its closest neighbour in obtaining one. The lamb will be divided in proportion to the number of people who will eat of it. And your lamb will be without blemish, a year old male. You know, take it from the sheep or the goats. So, Jesus is the Lamb of God. And then Jesus sees the two disciples following him. He says, "What do you want?" Again, in John's Gospel, there's a lot of questions like that. What do you want? Who are you looking for? Etc. The response to these questions is John's Gospel, really, is what people are looking for, what they are seeking. So this is a gospel of quest stories, in which this is the first quest, and in a word, Jesus proclaimed a message, and the first Christians proclaimed a person. Now, the translation of rabbi in the text tells us that the gospel was finally edited outside the Jewish territory. And rabbi is a positive person in this Gospel of John's. Now, also, the text goes on, where do you live? Or where do you abide? And where are you staying? All of that is very, very important, has a deep significance in John's Gospel. Jesus talks about, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. So this is a big, big theme in John's Gospel. Pardon me. And then there's a lovely bit at the end of that wee section there. And they stayed with him the rest of that day. It was about the 10th hour. Now, you may be reading this in a different translation, and some of them say it was about 4 o'clock. Now, it was 4 o'clock, but being John's Gospel, everything has huge symbolism. And the 10th hour is symbolic, because 10 is a figure of completion. There's 10 plagues, 10 commandments, 10 men in a synagogue congregation. So something is coming to completion here. And the 10th hour is a better translation than 4 o'clock. You get that. You have to put up with it. So continuing on with the text, one of these two who became followers of Jesus after hearing what John had said was Andrew. And then we have the call from Andrew to his brother, Simon Peter. And there's a familiarity here because, again, it's the end of the first century. Everybody knows who Simon Peter was. In the synoptics, he's called Simon. Then Jesus calls him Peter. You were Peter on this rock and so forth. But here he's listed as Simon Peter. And early next morning, Andrew met his brother and said to him, "We have found the Messiah." Now that's incredible too in John's Gospel, how quickly Jesus is announced as the Messiah or the Christ. And again, this reflects what the church at the end of the first century would have thought of Jesus, that he was the Christ, that he was the Messiah. Christ, Messiah is an Aramaic word, and Christ is the Greek translation, the anointed one, literally. And he took Simon to Jesus, and Jesus looked hard at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You're to be called Kephas," meaning rock. Kephas, again, an Aramaic word, and translated here. The commentary, one of the commentaries that I'm reading is saying that this whole section is driven by theology rather than a report of what actually happened. And that's a problem that modern readers have. They think that this is an account of what happened and what people said and what happened next. And that's not the priority for the writer way back at the end of the first century. It was to reflect how people saw Jesus, who he was, who is this Jesus, basically. And that's the theology. So moving on then to some questions for your consideration. The first question would be that John pointed the disciples towards Jesus as the one they should follow. Try and remember people in your life who have pointed you in a new and life-giving direction. And perhaps in some cases this may have involved directing you away from your association with them. For example, leaving home or changing jobs and so forth. A second one, Andrew didn't keep the good news to himself, but he invited his brother to join him in following Jesus. What is your experience of receiving or giving an invitation to join in some worthwhile adventure? And a third one, Jesus looked at Peter and could see what he would become. Who have been the people who have been able to name for you your potential? God bless you and keep you safe these days. Keep you safe in his word and his truth.